Good morning, everybody, and welcome to AV Daybreak. I almost said AV Smackdown, Jared. Throwback to Chris Netto. I almost said welcome to AV Smackdown. You believe
that? You couldn't even get 10 words in without saying his name. Is it Man Crush Monday? Can we put? Oh no, no,
it's Wednesday. It's not MCM. It's Woman Crush Wednesday. Who's our AV? There's an idea. Every Wednesday we're on Women Crush Wednesday. I would say as a diversity olive branch, maybe.
Okay, name the first one. Name the first one. Go.
Corey Schaefer.
Oh, that was actually I thought I was putting you on the spot.
No, she's kind of my go-to. You know, Corey Schaefer is one of those people who is just extremely open, giving, nice, smart. You know, Jared, she lent me active QSC speakers for my daughter's 16th birthday party so that we could DJ, you know, ourselves and not have to spend a lot of money. Isn't that awesome? Brought them down from Santa Barbara to the QSC office. I stopped by QSC in Costa Mesa. I picked them up from the lobby. She gave me a big hug. Like,
that is pretty sweet.
Why wouldn't she be the woman crush Wednesday?
When was that?
That was in October last year, right before, you know, it was about a year ago that she did that for me. And also say the first pair of Stance socks that I ever got were a thank you gift from Corey Schaefer for a networking meeting that we had and kind of shared some advice on accounts. See?
Okay. Well, look, you threw that out pretty fast.
It wasn't really hard. I love and admire a lot of women in our industry, but, you know, she was kind of the first one that came to mind.
Okay, fair enough.
I feel disappointment, Jared.
No. I'm only disappointed because I couldn't put you on the spot.
Oh, okay.
But I have three that come to mind right away.
But you have to choose one today. You have to choose one today.
I'll save the other two because you know who I would actually say, Kelly Perkins.
Yeah.
Because I think, from my experience anyways, and I work pretty close with Kelly for the last year or so, and I would say that from the time I saw her first picture as what was it, 2018, I think that she won Young AV Pro, maybe 2017. Her and
it was
Josh.
It was 2016, and the reason I know this is because I was just revisiting a blog I wrote on Stephen
Dubner. So that long ago now?
Yeah, Stephen Dubner's keynote, when they got Stephen Dubner from Freakonomics to come and keynote Infocom that year.
That was the best opening keynote. But anyways, from the time I saw her picture there, she has just, you know, seems like she kind of just exploded from the marketing world, you know?
Yeah, she's amazing. I mean, she came out of Vadio, which was, you know, a great start for her, and went over to AVI Systems for a little while.
She's at AVI Systems, yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing. And then in NSCA with the Ignite initiative.
She was starting with NSCA Ignite and doing some other work for them. And then I think now she's on her own.
And I'm going to stop recounting where I know Kelly's been because I don't want I don't want to sound stalkerish on tape.
Yeah. On tape.
Well, cool, man. That's good. See, we both came up somebody on the spot. We're not excluding anyone else. This gives everyone else an opportunity for next week.
Right. More to come. We've now created a new habit.
I like it.
But that Freakonomics keynote at that Infocom, and if you remember the prostitute monkeys.
Yeah, the monkey pro. So there, the three main things I remember. The three main things that Dubner talked about were, the fact that people don't wash their hands in the bathroom.
Right.
Including physicians at the Mayo Clinic.
Yes.
Unless you give them a $5 Starbucks gift card, and then all of a sudden they when you gamify it, they start washing their hands again.
Yeah.
The number two thing was the artificial insemination of turkeys.
Oh, right.
And then the third one was he ended strong with monkey prostitution.
With the first monkey prostitution ring.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And we can't even, the sad part is we can't even, for those of you that weren't there,
There's no
record of how funny that whole thing was. But
so what I found was what was interesting, and I bet you the other two are there for anybody who wants to hear Stephen Dubner tell those stories. I did I did realize that at least the artificial insemination of turkeys are on his podcast.
Right.
So I would think the other two are probably there too. They sound like stories he tells quite a bit.
That's an interesting book too, Freakonomics. That's one I'll throw out there that I would recommend you read. If you've never read it, it's a really interesting book.
Yeah, it's a really interesting book. And I there's a follow-up book to that called Think Like a Freak. And I really like that book because they kind of break down, kind of how they look out into other spaces to try to get examples that are relevant to something that seems completely unrelated. And I think, honestly, that was the biggest feedback I heard about the keynote was I heard a lot of people say, I expected more or I don't get it after that keynote. And I think it's because of the linear thinking of a lot of engineering types that because he didn't mention technology, he didn't mention line diagrams, he didn't mention Crestron products, they didn't know what to do with the data. And, you know, what I got from it was, you know, with the people washing hands, et cetera, that number one, that people often don't realize what their own habits are and often say they do things that they don't. Right. So when we're doing needs analysis with a customer, what I got out of that doing needs analysis with a customer, observation of their existing workplace will tell you a lot more about what they say they do and how they say they use systems. You actually need to watch and see because they will tell you the version of what they do that they think you want to hear that makes them sound better than what they actually do on a daily basis, whether purposefully or unpurposefully. Yeah, that's a word. Exactly when I said it, I'm like, okay, that's not a word. This is definitely not. I'm definitely getting spell checked on that one. The second thing that I thought of was, with the turkeys is that, you know, he's talking about artificial insemination is sometimes our world changes in a way that if we don't change the process that we're doing, you know, that we're using to do things, that we're not going to be able to get the result anymore. Like you can breed turkeys with larger and larger breasts, but at some point they cannot breed naturally anymore. And if you do that and you don't change your process of how they breed, your whole line dies out, right? So I like that. And then the last one with the monkey prostitution was just sometimes people are going to use tools in the way that you did not intend them to use them, right? Like sometimes people use things in different ways than you anticipated. And if you're not paying attention, you don't realize, you don't see those shifts. And so anyways, I got like three core lessons out of it, but I don't know, that's me.
Mine would just be one, and it's to observe, I guess.
Yeah.
If we just summed all that up.
That's totally cool. I agree. Observe. One word.
Observe.
The one word.
Observe.
So, Jared, I reached out last week to our friend Alex, who's in Vancouver, Canada. So Alex agreed to come on the show at the same time that I'm coming on the show.
Yep.
Early morning. So if you know anything about Canada, you know Vancouver's on the West Coast.
Yes, I think Vancouver has a much different West Coast than San Diego, though.
Yes, I would agree. Might be a little cooler, might be a little colder up there, maybe.
Yeah, they don't have the California.
No.
They do have some West Coast kind of, you know, looseness, we'll call it.
Hey, man, you can't skin a caribou in your front yard.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's you can't do that on Wreck Beach, man. You can do a lot there, but you can't do that.
Yeah, I agree.
They don't have Californians or the heat. Like you do,
yeah, but it's beautiful up there. Yeah. I love the Pacific Northwest. Yeah, so, well, I want to call Alex.
Crazy nice,
I invited Alex to come on the show. Alex has been complimentary since the beginning, and I felt really bad that we hadn't asked him to be on the show yet when he was probably one of the first people that complimented us on the show.
Alex is one of our seven fans.
Yes.
And we should honor that.
I know. And if I had a big foam, number one, and this was a video show, I would wear it right now.
Yep.
All right. Let's call Alex real quick. Alex, are you there?
Good morning. I am.
Sorry to wake you up.
Thanks for having me.
No, man. Thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it. I think it's, like I said, it's weird that we hadn't asked you yet, honestly. And I apologize for making things awkward.
It's not awkward. It's really great. Thank you very much. Long time listener, first time caller. So
yeah,
that's great.
Well, you know, your name came up last week because we were talking about the interwebs and the Twitters, right, Jared?
Yeah.
Yep.
And so when your name came up on the show, I'm like, I got to give him a shout out. And when I was giving you a shout out, I'm like, why haven't I asked this guy to come on the show before?
Yeah. Why haven't you come on the show before, Alex?
I haven't been. I haven't been asked. So here I am.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, you know, Jared and I, we like to do things. We like to do things different. And you know, sometimes, you know, some shows like to give people control over their narrative. They like to let people ramble on about their autobiography for, you know, a whole hour, but we don't like to do that. We don't like to give our guests control of our show. We barely have control of the show, right, Jared?
Yeah. I feel like we are out of control half the time.
So
run a wagon with some loose wheels.
So we have done in the past, we have done this thing called Profiled, where we just kind of look at your LinkedIn profile and tease you about it a little bit. But I don't know, Jared, have you pulled up Alex's LinkedIn profile?
Actually, I don't know if this speaks to the size of Canada or the size of the industry or both, but we have a lot of mutual contacts. I'm seeing a lot of people that I also know. But you know what I do actually like, and it's weird because it stands out to me, is Alex, you've used the tag, I believe technology can help.
Ah.
And that's right on his, header.
I see that.
And then right underneath his name before he even kind of gets into what he's about. And I don't know why. I just like the way that that's like, that's just like a bold, that's like a, like, I read that and I hear Simon Sinek saying it to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like a bold statement. I like that. And so I do have a question though. So how do I pronounce, is it Novmega?
It is, yeah.
Okay. And tell us about that name. Where does that name come from? Novmega Digital Solutions.
It actually is when you jam two words together.
Yes.
So Nova being new and Omega being great. When I incorporated the company, it was Nova Technologies, Great Technology Incorporated. My legal company name. Omega Digital Solutions is how we do business and probably makes a little bit more sense given the context of what we do today.
Yeah.
You're heavy on the signage side. That's what I get.
Heavy on the signage side. You know, did the COVID dance, the pivot, the two-step.
Yep.
And got back into more of the pro AV side of the business as well the last 9 months or so.
That's awesome. I like that. So I'm going to be remiss and say if for anybody listening, I don't think I said Alex's last name. It's Alex Fortin. I mean, I felt like everybody would just know, but I just realized.
You don't know Alex?
But honestly, the Novmega question, Jared, that was one of the first ones I was going to ask too when I was looking at that yesterday. But I love that. The new, it's new and great. New and great digital solutions. I like that idea.
Yeah, you know what? In a world of crazy business names that are hard to pronounce, I stuck with this one. So,
yeah, I'm glad you haven't just gone fully to NDS, which is what most
NDS systems.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The alphabet soup. I always wanted a company in Arizona to, you know, like a water treatment company to be Arizona Sewer Systems because I just thought the acronym would be funny on the side of the truck, but didn't work
out.
I
always wanted to do like the ABC audiovisual.
Well, you know, if you listen to Gary Vee, you know why all the companies did the ABC or the Acme or the AAA.
Or AAA, yeah, yeah.
It's for yellow pages, right? So that the first
that's
thing
like our
you
number
see
one.
When you open a phone book was alphabetical. So you were AAA plumbing. Why would I go any farther? Why am I going to go to BBB
Why would you
plumbing?
Look any further? Why would you look any further? What else are you finding? You were a B2B Best Buy guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing people, I don't know if you have this in the US as well, Mark, but Best Buy up here They have their Geek Squad, and they have like a B2B side of their business. Yep. And in the smaller regions, like where I'm from, they're whatever. They're nothing big. But when you get into those large regions like Vancouver, Toronto, like they're pretty serious business. Like that's a pretty big. Well, at least in the Toronto side, like on the they do some pretty large integration projects actually.
Yeah, I bumped into Best Buy for Business is what they call it here. I guess they call it there too, same thing. I bumped into them a few times out here. Not a ton.
We call it.
I'll tell you honestly, the big run for me that happened with Best Buy, Ultima Electronics, Circuit City, CompUSA was back in the housing boom. When I was in Arizona doing residential, all of the consumer electronics stores started up these installation arms to capitalize on the fact that people were buying homes, buying new technology, and they wanted to start doing the installations. We played David to Goliath in those things, like, you know, hey, if we were much more flexible, I think, in comparison. I know especially, and I can talk poorly about Ultima Electronics because they no longer exist, but I know specifically with like Ultima Electronics, like they ran, I believe their corporate office was in like Colorado or somewhere. But they, all their decisions had to go through that corporate office. So like their local teams were not flexible enough to handle things on the fly when things came up. And interestingly enough, things come up a lot in installation that don't come up when you're doing box sales. So they had some trouble navigating that. I think Best Buy has been much better at that. I think I remember being called or recruited a few times early on when that team was being built, the commercial team. It seemed like they went out to the integration community and got good people and came up with a regional strategy, but I can let Alex concede or
I could see confirm you or deny that.
Could you?
I think you would look sharp. Yeah. You would look sharp.
But the funny thing is I almost worked at State Farm in 2000, in about 2000, 2001. So I could have been in red and khaki and been Jake from State Farm.
Nice. So is that where you got your intro into kind of the industry then, Alex? Because you've got some higher education behind you just in sales, marketing, business.
And
went to Best Buy.
Yeah, so actually I started out at Visions Electronics.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had a little bit of a career blow up. I was a recruiter for about 6 months and got fired. And one of those turning points in your career where you're like, this is the worst thing that could have happened to me. It was right before Christmas. You know, I was living downtown, living the big life, and got fired. I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'm sure it's a scenario that a lot of people are in right now. And I just went after the first thing. You know, I know that I love sales and I have a passion for electronics. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. I'll go work the floor at Visions Electronics and just, you know, see what happens. And a friend of mine was a GM. So I got an intro to the regional.
Yep.
And 3 months later, I was sales manager. And 6 months later, I was running a $25 million store. So
nice
for you. Promotions I've had in the company. Previous to that, I had quite a bit of B2B experience, and the regional at the time took over the commercial group and said, hey, we're going to open up BC. Do you know anyone? I was like, hey, I got a lot of B2B experience. Let's do that. So I helped them grow from 0 to 5 million in the first year, and wasn't too long after that, after the head office of Best Buy was knocking on my door saying, we love what you do. We hate what you do. Come do it for us.
Yeah. So, I love that.
Yeah. We love what you do. We hate who you do it for. Come, come over here. Okay, you were there for quite a while.
Yeah, it was a really interesting time. It was a time of when there was still Future Shop, so it was a little bit of what I would call entrepreneurial business spirit. So got in really, really at the beginning for them and their growth. Helped them grow from 12 to 52 million. And decided to exit and start Omega Digital Solutions. And yeah, it was a great time. Did a lot of encampment sales. If you remember the oil boom in 2013, 2012.
Yep.
Doing about $5.3 million in business. And Wow. Then that went for another turn, and you know, you start scrambling around. What am I going to do again? So, kind of that ebb and flow process.
Yeah, that's it. That's amazing. That, like you said, kind of that that cycle, knowing that things are cyclical, yeah. that it's not a constant ramp, right, is something that's very important, especially today.
Yeah, so Novmega was 2016. Tell me about I'm always interested in knowing like how people have found that first kind of 3 years of running a business and did you start out like the traditional, you know, solopreneur where you were just on your own doing your own thing and then you grew a team, or did you go out, get the backing, get the team and start to work, or how did the start of Novmega come around?
Yeah, so the first 2 years I was consulting for a digital signage company, Digital Signage Integrator, and you know, they wanted some help. They wanted to grow. They weren't sure how to do it, so it was really a consulting business for the first 2 years. So it's really only the last two years that I've been transactional as an integrator. So I'm still in that first 3 years, but I can tell you it's kind of like banging your head up against the wall while burning all the money in your pocket.
I've never heard it put that way, but your sentiment is felt.
Yeah, it's a struggle. It's a challenge. I would say that, you know, that's probably the easiest part, is just dealing with, you know, clients or projects or the business side of it. I'd say the biggest challenge is probably the mental part. That's really something that I've worked on over the last 3 years, and dialing in my my capability of having the right mentality for business, for being an entrepreneur or a solopreneur, if you will.
And what would you say that is?
To be non-emotional, to have a stoic approach to your business, to remember that, you know, all of this is transient, and, you know, there's much more important things in the world, you know, your family or your friends, and not to get too bought in to anything in particular other than the most important stuff.
Yeah. I like that. I like that idea of taking some of the emotion out of the decision-making, because I think, you know, for many people, and I'm not a business owner, but I've worked for a lot of small business owners. In fact,
and you played one on TV.
I played one on TV. I think sometimes that's, you know, the fact that people refer to their business as their child or their, you know, their second baby or their, you know, their other marriage. I think we a lot of times relate a highly emotional state to it. And of course you should be passionate about it, right? I mean, you want to be passionate about it. I think I read a book called Decisive by Chip and Dan Heath. And one of the things they talk about in tough decisions is gaining distance, right? And part of gaining distance is, the reason you gain distance is to overcome short-term emotion. Because it's not that you can't be emotional about your business. You want to be emotional when you're dealing with your employees. You want to be passionate about what you do. You want to be passionate about fulfilling, you know, you believe technology can help. The funny thing is, you said, I approach my business with stoicism. And then when your first line in your LinkedIn profile is something that is very not, you know, an objective statement. It's something that relates your passion and your mindset and your philosophy, right? Very soft things, not hard things. So I think that emotion can be very well placed in business. But what Chip and Dan Heath were talking about in this short-term emotion was this idea of gaining distance. And they talked about the three tens. I don't know if you've seen this, the three tens when you think about an emotion. If I make that decision, how am I going to feel in 10 minutes? How am I going to feel in 10 hours? How am I going to feel in 10 years? And really looking at those three things. Okay, in 10, if I have to make this phone call to my boss, I have to tell him something that's uncomfortable, right? In 10 minutes,
the answer is tired.
I'm gonna be really upset about it. In 10 hours, I'm gonna be kind of relieved that I got the conversation off my plate, although I don't know what's gonna come of it yet. And in 10 years, I'm not gonna care. And so when they look at that, they go, okay. So if in the long term, you're not going to feel that bad about it, it's probably something you should do. You know, it's kind of like the regret thing too, right? In 10 years, if I didn't take this opportunity, I'm really going to regret it. It's going to be hard. 10 minutes from now, I'm going to be freaking out. tomorrow I'm going to be trying to figure out what to do now that I've committed. And 10 years from now, I'm going to be really happy that I didn't pass this up. You know, so it's kind of like that, overcoming that short-term cringe or that short-term excitement, right? It's why the car dealer doesn't want you to leave the car lot, right? They don't want you to get the 10 minutes, 10 hours distance between the decision, the $45,000 decision. They want you to make it in the emotional heat of the moment, right? It's why they want you to take a test drive. It's, you know, it's why every, it's also an interesting thing in case you hadn't heard of this before. It's also why every car on the lot that you drive, if typically if you go to a car dealership and you test drive a car, they're loaded with all of the options. Because when you drive the car, you actually start to take mental ownership of it, which is why they want you to drive it. Which why a lot of times they won't even give you a price unless you drive it. They want you to start to take mental ownership of it. You see yourself driving it. You see it in your driveway. You see yourself driving to work in it. And then actually getting that same car and not getting all the things were in it, you feel like you're already losing something even though you never owned it. There's actually a mental loss you take in your head that, oh, power windows. I like power. Like I had power windows. They were in the car I just drove. I got to give those up. Like that's worth $3,000. I mean, so it's an interesting thing, the emotional piece.
What you did say there, Alex, too, I can 100% relate with is, that, you know, it's probably about maybe 3 years, up until maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I was the opposite of what you're trying to be, where I was buried in the business every day, every waking moment concerned me. You know, it was like, if I wasn't working, I felt like I was letting people down. I was, you know, I wasn't serving the business. I wasn't doing my job. And what I found kind of made a difference for me was not when I realized I had necessarily confidence in the business, but actually confidence in myself. And so when what flipped for me was, you know what, I'm going to do, and I'm always going to do everything that I possibly can while maintaining some sort of balance within my life. I will always do that. And if at the end of that, all this collapses around me, I'll be okay. I'll go like maybe I take that for granted, or maybe it's a bit of ego, but I do firmly believe, like, and this brought me a lot of peace, was that, you know what, like, if all this collapses around me, I'll be okay. I'll think of something else. I'll go get a job. I'm probably, you know, I would think that I would be an excellent candidate to another integrator if I wanted to stay in the industry or what have you. So yeah, I think what you're saying you're working on is a good point. How are you if you're not stoic? Like you were saying you've been working on getting to that point. And so what has the last couple of years been feeling like if you're still working on trying to be stoic, trying to be, you know, releasing of that anxiety, you know?
Yeah, I think you both hit the nail on the head. I think my default mode is emotional. I think that's, or passionate, you know, is probably another way to put it as well. So my early years of my career, you know, I can totally align with that feeling that you have of like constantly needing to be working, constantly needing to be involved in the business, growing. I mean, you know, I'm a competitive person. It's inherent in my nature. So I would say that's my default mode. You know, I was really fortunate that early on in my career, I met a lot of wildly successful people and started to ask them some questions like, hey, if you could do it all over again, like what's one thing that you would change? And unanimously, and almost every single case, well, yeah, unanimously, the answer was I would spend more time with my family. And so I knew early on that I was like, okay, I'm gonna do as much as I can, go as fast as I can, grow as fast as I can, learn as much as I can. But when I have a family, I'm going to slow down a little bit. I'm not going to make that same mistake that a lot of other people did. So that's where it comes in.
Isn't that so counterintuitive to what you see about success and entrepreneurship, say in the social media realm, where it's like, you got to be out there grinding, man, and hustling, man. And you got to be up at 3 a.m. kicking down doors and making business happen. And I just find that so interesting that experienced successful business people will tell you, no, man, you got to slow it down, pay attention to the family, make sure you're attentive to what matters and get everything else in. Whereas you have the opposite opinion of some people that are just like, if 10 calls a day don't work, make 1,000. If 1,000 don't work, 10,000, you know?
Yeah, man, you just got to 10X everything, right?
You got everything is 10X.
Just keep 10Xing. Just keep 10Xing.
Mark and I do have our Mark and I do have
our own right out of business.
Our disagreements between the 10X theory, but you have a personal Mark has a personal vendetta against
You've never had $2,000 taken out of your pocket by Grant Cardone for bullshit advice. I'm so did I just say that? We'll bleep it. I will bleep it.
Mark, it's not bullshit. It's not bullshit if you just didn't do it right.
Ouch. Yeah, and that's what Grant Cardone would say, actually. You know, in fact, the interesting thing, and I'll get off the Grant Cardone thing. He used to sell these tapes, right, that you would listen to in your car for mindset, and people would encourage you to buy these tapes. And so
I didn't know he did tapes.
Yeah, he had tapes for the car because you need to spend that hour in the car listening to Grant Cardone tell you his advice about what you need to do for the day as a pep talk. And so you'd throw the tapes, you know, you buy this little case of cassette tapes, you know, like the box set, like I used to have the Bible on cassette. This was the Grant Cardone sales series. It's about 400 bucks, I think, is what he sold it for, like a $400 cassette tape thing. Because Jared, you're so busy trying to hang on to a dollar that you'll never make a million. So you should just give me 400 of yours and I'll
you gotta spend money to make money, man.
There was always this dare. There was the dare to on how to buy stuff. And then at the end, the funniest thing was at the end of the Grant Cardone tapes, it says, the only thing that's stopping you from making a copy of this tape is your integrity. And I was like, okay, that's funny. So every single time it would end with that because he was afraid, you know, people were going to make
copies. You should have made copies and sold them for $2,000.
Exactly. See, look, 10X, $4,000, right. 10X.
Well, you just sell 10 times as many as he does. Yeah.
Craziness. But yeah, no, I agree with you, Jared. I mean, I think many times we mistake action or busyness for progress.
Or productivity.
Right? And so there's this idea, this thought, this feeling that if we're not working every second, then we're not moving something forward. But sometimes that work is either counterproductive, it's wasting energy that could be better spent on something else. You know, sometimes that few minutes of quiet or that hour or that day of just like, hey, nothing much really happened today. Sometimes that's where you get the reset. You know, like some of the best things that I think about for business and stuff come when I'm like cooking dinner or, you know, like you said, Alex, like spending time doing things that are important to me, you know, time with family, you know, doing things around the house, et cetera. Like some of my best ideas seem to come in those times. And, you know, then I find myself on my computer at 11 to 3 in the morning, writing down all the stuff that popped into my head. But not being busy sometimes helps unlock, I think.
Yeah, it's tough. What's like one thing, Alex, that I was just thinking about your profile is actually pretty clean.
It is.
And I feel like, you know, I would not say I'm an AV Tweep expert or a veteran like Mark. And so I would feel like Alex, you're fairly new to the AV Tweep side of things, aren't you? Like probably within the last year is where you've got more involved or spoken up more, would you say?
Yeah. That's accurate, yep.
So I'm gonna put you on the spot, and this is a question unlike any other question that has ever been asked.
Wow!
Right? Prepare yourself.
I'm prepared.
What would you? This is your chance. This is your chance to tell the people. So you have to use it. What would you say you would want people to know about you that they may not know from just reading your profile or just the small interactions you've had online? What would you want people to know about you?
Wow, that is a good question to put on the spot.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'll reframe that. When you started your profile and jumped in the community and became visible.
Yeah.
What was that original, you know, what pushed you originally intent. To do that? Yeah, what was that original intent?
Yeah, I think that it kind of goes back to even that tagline of, you know, around technology and is that you see things through paradigms, right? you know, we each kind of see things through paradigms. And I think that, you know, I wanted to connect with a community that saw things through the same paradigm.
Gotcha.
Interesting.
No, no like big goals. I wasn't trying to, you know, grow my social or anything like that. Yeah. We're just trying to connect with people that see things through the same paradigm. You know, the AV industry, particularly in I find in Canada, is a little strange in the way that a lot of integrators are not very open to talking to other integrators or even people across industry. And so, you know, it's difficult to have, you know, conversations just about even the business or competitors or really anything, to have a real honest conversation with people. Yeah. So I was looking to, I guess, connect with a community that understood that and would, you know, share those same type of values and paradigms, and opening that discussion up.
Yeah, I will say, okay, I think you tapped into something interesting here. And I don't know that I've ever articulated it this way until I heard you say that. So I'm glad we had you on the show, because, so for me, what I agree. I have met people in person, especially in our local market. When you bump into somebody in the local market who does what you do for a competitor, oftentimes they have a scarcity mindset, and they think that the pie is only so big, and anything they share with you potentially reduces the amount of work they're going to get, the amount of success they're going to have, and their long-term potential to grow their business. And they hold on to things very, very tightly. And we have that there. I would agree with you that I think so the people who are on social have, most of them seem to have some longing to, number one, kind of get some confirmation, vet ideas that they have, et cetera, right? Like get some validation that what they're doing is the right thing to do from other people that are within their industry. But there are also people who are kind of in that, they don't have a scarcity mindset. You know, they have that surplus mindset that there's enough work for everybody. And if, hey, if all the good ones get their portion, then we're all doing great. Right. And they're not afraid to share their ideas, their opinions, et cetera. I have seen that, especially in the local market, where people just, they really hold on to things. And in fact, I think we even kind of default to it sometimes, Jared, right? Because when we talk about business, sometimes after the show or on the weekend or during the week, you know, we ping something and you're like, hey, have you ever made a form like this? Or I ask you if you've ever, you know, if you've ever, and we almost hedge it like every single time that it seems like we talk about something like, well, hey, you know, we really don't come into contact with each other in our markets. Like, could you share that with me? Right. Yeah. Like we almost hedge that scarcity mentality, even though neither one of us have it. Like if you were next door, I'd share it with you, honestly. Because I think too,
I wouldn't.
You would.
I'd be out to destroy. I'm out to destroy.
Well, you are a business owner, and I'm not. But it is interesting that it has that. And I think our industry trade associations, I don't know that in the past, AVIXA did a lot to open that up. It seemed like NSCA with their BLC conference was one of the first ones. And then, you know, Commercial Integrator with their Total Tech Summit, those were more places where people come together to share processes and come together as business leaders and share their findings. Whereas, you know, a place like Infocom where you're learning about product and maybe methodology weren't, but I'm seeing more and more of that through AVIXA.
You do. The NSCA does do a good job of, because a lot of their web, like I know from experience, like a lot of their webinars always consist of integration leaders. And these are people that are ranging, I think, from a medium-sized business to some of the larger integration companies in the US. Mm-hmm. And they talk about what they're doing. What are they doing? How are they working with it? How, you know, and maybe you're probably not wrong that I'm sure they're not disclosing all their company secrets and,
yeah.
But they're talking about the general concept of what they're doing and what they've seen success with. And, you know, we've talked about this before is that, you know, when you have a team of employees and as a leader, it's, you almost have to prioritize the success of your employees above all else. And you just have to believe that the outcome of that leads to the success of the business. So what's interesting is that's a challenge. now take it one step further to being outside your bubble, and now you have to be successful, or you have to wish success to everyone in the industry.
Yep.
For the greater good of the industry now. And that's, I mean, I don't even know if I'm there yet. I can easily speak with, I know, you know, I've leaned on people like yourself, Steve Greenblatt, Brock McGinnis, who might be the closest one to home for me. Alex and I have never had the opportunity, although I think he's asked me for a document, which I've never provided. And I feel bad now that I think about it. And so, Alex, I will try and get that to you if you still need it. Yeah. But anyways, you know, I had a chance to lean on people like that, and it's been invaluable. So yeah, it's tough to wish success to people that you feel like could take from you, but it is that scarcity mindset.
I think it comes down to confidence as well in yourself and your business model. Yep. I'm noticing that there's kind of a younger crowd of AV professionals, at least here in Western Canada, that are collaborating, if you want to call it a coalition, if so to speak, that all independent business owners, but you know, when we need to lean on each other, we have the capability to do so, whether they be installers or programmers or what have you. So I'm starting to see it. I'm definitely a proponent of it. I do believe that you know, high tide raises all ships, and I love collaborating. So I'm seeing that come into play more and more, which is, I'm grateful to see.
Well, I think too, I mean, when you do that, you get, especially in a time like right now, right? I mean, in a time like right now, you really need multiple sets of eyes and people with different perspectives that are seeing kind of like the little micro trends in the market, because nothing big, I mean, other than the push that education had for, you know, turning everything into distance learning over the last 6 months before the semester started again. You know, there really hasn't been a huge movement. There's a lot of talk about, you know, touchless and about personal devices and about, you know, temperature tablets and things like that. And there are some small trends to look at, but I think having that diverse network of people that are all looking at things from different perspective, I really think it helps you kind of identify, you know, what's going on in the market. An analogy I'll give, and it's interesting, there's a weird museum analogy. I don't know where it came from, but that's the way this show works. So when I was at Mad Systems, we built an Antikythera device. And the Antikythera device, it was a star clock from Greeks built that predicted the motion of the four known planets, all the moon phases, and the 133-month solar eclipse cycle. They predicted all of that with a machine. They call it the first computer. It was a box of 50 gears. You could put in a time and you could crank it through and see where everything was going to be at. And if you think about, like, in those times, like, you know, kingdoms they thought were going to start and end when the sun went black in the sky, right? I mean, it was like a big deal. So if you could predict it, that became very strange. So they took all the data from the Babylonians staring at the sky and they turned it into an actual mechanical machine. Well, when they found that, like, they found it in pieces at the bottom of the ocean, and nobody had a clue what it was, because everything that was bronze in Greece usually got destroyed. In fact, most of the statues, they have their bronzes they pulled out of the ocean too, because Greece was conquered over and over and over again, and everything that was bronze got melted down to make a shield and a spear. So any of the art or any of the machines that exist are usually from shipwrecks, where they just couldn't get to the bronze to melt it down and make another weapon out of it. But they never knew what it was. And the way that they finally found out what it was they took the piece of the mechanism that they had, and they had known that there were some type of etchings on it, but they couldn't even with like a rubbing, like putting paper and rubbing charcoal over the top, they could never figure out what the characters were. And so what they did was they took this object, I forget where the dome's at, but they took it to this like half dome, and you put it in the middle of the room. And what this half dome is are cameras and lights from a whole bunch of different angles. And what happens is it lights the object and takes a picture from 20 degrees off center. And then it lights it 10 degrees laterally. Then it lights it 10 degrees laterally. And it takes thousands of pictures from all of these angles in different light. And then the computer composites the shadows from all those. And when they do, all of a sudden it said something. I guess my point is, when we have these different perspectives and we have these snapshots from 100 different areas, then we bring them all together, all of a sudden we can now read you know, the etching on our industry, right? Now we can see where the opportunity is and where we need to go and what we need to do. But that one perspective would never give us, Mark, would never give us that view. I know you got to go, man. I know. I'm sorry.
Mark, I'm hold on. I've heard a lot of analogies in my life.
Yes.
And that has to be the craziest.
I knew it.
But sensical analogy. Because I will tell you, for the first, you know, 26 minutes of that analogy, I was trying to figure out where you were going with it, but you did bring it all together at the end, which I'm pretty impressed with. That was actually really good. I like the analogy, and I learned a lot.
The 26 minutes, exactly. This has been AV Antikythera Device.
And Mark Coxon signing out.
No, I mean, I love that idea. I mean, I love that idea. Chris Netto, by the way, sent us an idea for our next show this morning on Twitter, Jared. So we may have to look at that. He sent us an article on 6 ways to help your employees craft their job into their calling.
I saw that, yeah. Yeah, actually, I read an article. I shared an article yesterday on LinkedIn that was written by an EOS guy, and he talks about also trying to create what you do to be something that you love, and how the new one of the things, it was like how to trying to create a place of work rather than a place to work. And it was, yeah, so interestingly enough, along the same line, so I'm gonna have to read through that, but I do have to jump off this call. You guys can carry on.
Yeah, I may talk to Alex for 3 or 4 minutes before we sign off.
Yeah, do it. I dare you.
I dare you.
All right, Alex.
That would be the first time that happened.
It would be, but that's okay. Alex, it was incredible to meet you in person, and yeah, Jared, I feel likewise. Like we should connect again. And anyways, thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks, Jared. Thanks for joining Alex and I on AV Daybreak this morning.
No problem. No problem, guys.
See you, man. Well, Alex, I want to take advantage because I woke you up early. So I'm going to take advantage of a couple more minutes with you, which I've never done before. Usually we would just wrap up and I feel bad for doing it. But, you know, the one comment that you posted that Jared and I replayed last week was, you know, something that really resonated with me. And I wanted to give you a chance to kind of just talk through your mindset on that, since we're talking about mindset and being flexible and getting distance and all those kind of things. You know, you posted online, you know, kind of a quip, but a very thoughtful quip, I thought. You know, when are the unprecedented times just going to be the times? Mm-hmm. Like, and you're talking about paradigms. You know, to me, this whole idea of by continuing to state that we're unprecedented times, we create a paradigm for ourselves. Do you feel like, you know, ditching that terminology unlocks opportunity for business owners right now?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we started to see it with all the statements from the CEOs, you know, it was the same thing. It was the same language over and over and over, which was defeatism.
Yep.
And I have a lot of compassion for people that are going through difficult times right now. And we all are in some level, but there's some people that are going through really, really, really tough times.
Yeah.
And, you know, as someone who's compassionate about humanity as a whole, I look to try to inspire people when I can to just take that power back and empower themselves to be able to just see that there is going to be another tomorrow. You know, that the sun will rise again on AV Daybreak next Wednesday. and to just to change the way you look at things a little bit. You know, there's a saying, if you change you look at things, the things you look at change.
Yep.
And you know, like, our industry is incredibly hard hit. The two other industries that my company serves, you know, hospitality and retail, have been hit immensely hard as well.
Yeah.
And so I see it time and time and time again. And, you know, I've been through this a couple of times. I've been through the dot-com bust. I've been through the recession in 2008. I've been through the oil bust in 2014, where oil dropped to horrifically low levels and business shut down. I've been through it a couple of times to know that it's just business, you know. Take this opportunity, if you have the opportunity to spend it with the time, you know, with people you love, give back to your community. and just change the paradigm a little bit. This is it. This is what it's going to be for the unsuitable future until something changes again.
Yeah.
So take the opportunity, you know, let it marinate and then use it.
Yeah, it's an interesting, it's definitely an interesting way to start to look at it. And like you said, I think there are, I mean, obviously hospitality and retail were hit super hard. I mean, we have a whole live events section in AV that was, you know, decimated. I can't imagine if your job was being a, you know, somebody that was setting up and breaking down shows. Like if you work for Freeman or PSAV or one of these large AV companies that just works in hotels or works at event centers or works in convention centers. And those are your contracts and you have thousands of people that do that across the country. You know, there's not a lot to do there right now. I mean, you can move to virtual, which I think some people have done. I think you can do some of those things, but it's not as labor intensive. So it still doesn't help you employ all of your human capital, right? So although you may be able to find revenue replacement in a way that keeps the business from dying completely, you're not always able to find a job for every single person that was in your company before, especially in those physically intensive type of environments, right? I mean, if your job is setting up and breaking down things, you know, if you have a virtual studio, you're not really setting up and breaking that down every day, you know.
Agreed. Yeah,
it becomes a lot harder, and if you are, you're doing it in one spot, you're not doing it across 1,000 booths on a trade show floor, right? Yeah. So it, you know, there's opportunity there, but I like your idea of like you finding a way to use it. And you know, and you mentioned as something to me, you know, outside of the show that I think is important too, is that, you know, a lot of us fell into this industry. You know, you said you fell into the industry, you got fired from, you know, being a recruiter, you went to school for business, you started your career as a recruiter, that didn't work out. And all of a sudden you found yourself looking for a job. You know, my biggest kind of career pivot and when I became much more visible than I had ever been was kind of due to the same thing. I was in AV, but I lost my first job ever in 2013. And all of a sudden found myself in need of a job. And I had never worked on the manufacturing side of AV before, and ended up at Milestone. But that took kind of some, I kind of fell into that as well. I mean, I had to go out to my network. I had to start looking at things maybe I wouldn't have looked at. They had to take a chance on me as somebody who had never called on integrators and accounts. And I mean, a lot of things had to kind of fall together in order for that to happen. And none of that would have been planned. Like they weren't looking for me. Nobody was recruiting me to come over to that job. In fact, they didn't even know I existed, right? So I think there's this idea of how do you recreate those variables? Like if you are out there struggling or if you are out there trying to find something new, you know, if you fell into AV, was there some environmental factor or some variables that you can control that if you recreated them would help you fall into whatever the next thing is that happens to be your future? It's hard to think of, but I think again, I think this is where the power of community comes in, because somebody can send me their resume and, you know, although they may see a very linear path in their career, or they think that they have to find another job doing live, somebody could send me their resume and I could read all those skills that they have. And I go, oh my gosh, this person would be a great X or a great Y, you know? Yeah. And it almost reminds me of Up in the Air. Did you watch Up in the Air with George Clooney?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So in Up in the Air at one point, the guy's getting fired from the insurance company, right? JK, whatever his last name is, I forget. I wanted to say Rowling, but that's not the right name. That's an author. That's not an actor. He's getting fired from his job. George Clooney's there. And he's screaming at them because he's losing his job and he's worried about what he's losing. And George Clooney looks him in the eyes and he said, well, you know, how much did they pay you to give up on your passion?
Yeah.
And I think about that many times because like as a kid, I wasn't an AV guy. Like AV was never what I set out to do. It just happened to be something I found that I'm good at, that I love, and I found a community around. But if I had to go back to think about what I would do if I didn't have this, I would really reconnect to the things I did as a kid, the things I thought I was going to be when I grew up. What did I spend my time doing in high school? I mean, I went to the zoo and sat on a bench and drew rhinoceroses, you know, like what, you know, like, okay. So there's something I did when I had all the options in the world, didn't have to worry about money, didn't have. So what are those things that you do? And are there ways to leverage your skill sets you learned from business now in potentially another place where you had passion previously, right?
Yeah, I love that scene, by the way, because I think it's really telling, and it pulls on an emotional heartstring where we've all kind of had that moment where we're like, you know, you're sitting somewhere and you're going, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And we've all kind of had that, like, if I could do anything, what could I, you know, what would I do, right? But he asked the question of like, is there any way to, is there any kind of thing that would propel you to find that next thing? And I think that it's taking a fearless step.
Yeah.
You know, I was forced to do that. Like I was pushed out onto the street and out of work. And so I had to take something.
Yeah.
And that propelled the last, you know, 12 years, 13 years of this AV business that I've been in. Right.
Yeah.
But I often think about that. I think, you know, one of the things that Jared said that was, that resonated with me as well was, you know, personally, I know that I can, you know, whatever happens, if, you know, AV collapses for me and I got to go back and figure something else out, I know I can do that. And the only reason I know I can do that is because I've had to do it.
Yeah.
You know, when push came to shove, I actually had to go out and put myself out there and take some risks and try some different things and fail and, you know, be okay with failure and realize that that's not my defining terminology for myself. And just to move on and keep trying. And, you know, it's like the little train that could. I think I can, really.
Yeah, I've always thought that same thing. I mean, I joked, you know, I've joked many times, like, hey, if I lost my job tomorrow, like, you know, I'm not proud. Like, I have three kids and we have, you know, like, hey, I can still sling drinks and riblets at Applebee's if I need to, right? Like, I waited tables for years through college. Like, I'm good with people. I mean, I can go do these things. Now, right now during COVID, that might be different, right? Because LA just closed indoor dining and outdoor dining again. But like you said, there's always something you can do to kind of get through. And I've never felt helpless, I guess, in that way, which is a good feeling. And I'm not saying that I'm not, I guess, privileged to feel that way in a way. But like history has told me, you know, that there's a way to get through things. So, well, hey man, I want to leave on that note, you know, positivity, no scarcity, finding opportunity in the passions that you've once had, retaking skill sets and pushing them out there. If anybody's, you know, going through holidays and having a rough time this year, really feel for you. If there's some way that, and I'll speak for Jared, if there's some way Alex, Jared, or I, in any way could open up our networks to you, or you have, you know, questions for us, or, need just some kind of, advice, pep talk, et cetera. Like, I think you've shown yourself to be a person that's done that, you know, online, trying to help people reshift their gears and get their mind right. So I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you joining us in the morning. I don't want to go too much without Jared. I already feel guilty. Feel like I'm cheating. Feel like I'm cheating right now. So
thank you so much. It's honestly, it's a pleasure. And I love listening to you guys' podcast and really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you both.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for joining us on AV Daybreak with Alex Fortin from Novmega in Vancouver. We will talk to you guys next week. How do you know, man?